This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Americans want everything from their presidents. Charm, humor, good looks. We want them to be smart and just like regular folks. We also want a president who's religious and comfortable with the language, the metaphors, and the parables of religion. As much as Americans celebrate the separation of church and state, we want our leader to look to higher authority for guidance from time to time. As Time magazine phrased it in a recent article, church and state may be separate, but faith and politics are not. So how is religion playing out in this campaign? With President Bush and Senator Kerry dead even in the most recent polls, could voters' beliefs about faith be the decisive factor come November? And can either candidate overcome perceptions of their party as beholden to liberal secularists or to the religious right? Later in the program, a shift in Canadian politics after yesterday's election. The Liberals will need help from smaller parties to govern. But first, religion and presidential politics. Join the conversation. How does a candidate's expression of religion influence your vote? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. First, let's get the lay of the land from Scott Keeter. He's Associate Director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press, co-author of The Diminishing Divide, Religion's Changing Role in American Politics. And he joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for coming in.
Nice to be here, Neil.
According to your polling, how important is religion to Americans?
Religion is very important to Americans, and it has been as long as we've been doing polls. There are different ways of looking at it. One would be simply to ask whether Americans affiliate themselves with a religious tradition, and the vast majority of them do. By various measures, only 10 to 15% of Americans can be considered secular in their orientation. Mm-hmm. Another way would be simply to ask people how important religion is to them. And by that measure, 6 in 10, and consistently over the years, 6 in 10 have said that it's very important to them.
Well, given that importance, how is that reflected in what they want from candidates and presidential candidates, I guess, in particular?
Well, there's an interesting distinction. There's still in the country a divide over the question of whether churches should be involved in politics. Various times the question's been asked, you get about half of the people saying that it's fine for churches to speak out. But there is no comparable division in terms of public expectations about politicians being religious or using their religious perspectives to influence their views on policy. We asked in a poll about a year ago if they thought there was too much, too little, or about the right amount of reference to religious faith by politicians today, and what we found is that an overwhelming majority thinks there is either the right amount or too little. 40%, in fact, said too little.
And you also did some polling, which I found interesting, on some religious rhetoric that's been uttered in the past few years by really prominent political figures, and the response was quite interesting.
We thought that it would be interesting to go beyond the opinion questions about whether you like it or not if you hear politicians talking about religion, and we read them several quotes. And half of the sample, we read the quotes anonymously. That is, we said, a politician said this. Does that make you comfortable or uncomfortable? The other half of the sample, randomly divided, we said, Bill Clinton said this, or George W. Bush said this. In both cases, whether attributed or not, we found that there was both widespread acceptance for some of the kinds of things that we read, but also a considerable amount of concern or lack of comfort. And what it told us was that there is a limit to how much of this the public wants to hear. Even people who in our poll and other questions showed themselves to be quite religious expressed a degree of discomfort about some of the kinds of things that are said. So we believe from this that there is a limit to how much a politician can talk about religion.
How does religion in American life break down politically, Republican versus Democrat?
Well, there's one of the most interesting changes over the past 15 or 20 years in American politics has been the increasing convergence between partisan identification and religious tradition. What we find today is that evangelicals are about 2-to-1 Republican over Democrat, but in 1987, when we first started polling, on this subject. Evangelicals were evenly divided. Here I'm talking about white evangelicals.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, Catholics, who used to be a dependable Democratic constituency, are now very much a swing constituency. And seculars, while probably always tilting a bit to the Democratic Party, are even more firmly there than they are than they were in the past.
Here's an email question we have from Adam in St. Paul. How has the Catholic vote traditionally broken down in terms of party line? You said traditionally Catholics were Democrat. I've had debates with friends who believe that Catholics with their stereotypical chaste values vote Republican. I've always viewed Catholics as a progressive, once discriminated against minority who see Democrats as the holder of most of their core values. Who's right?
Well, they were certainly at one time in the post-New Deal period aligned more with the Democratic Party, and consistently so. But that has changed, really, beginning in the probably in the 1960s and 70s, but especially with Ronald Reagan and his appeals to working-class white ethnic voters in states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, the so-called Reagan Democrats, to the point that today we have a constituency, white Catholics, that is, that's very much up for grabs. And our most recent polling suggests something interesting in that when we look at white Catholics, they are absolutely evenly divided between Kerry and Bush, and that holds true even among Catholics who say that they go to worship services regularly.
Do they know that John Kerry is Catholic in this polling?
We don't ask that question, but I have a feeling that given how much he's been in the news about his views of abortion and what the bishops have had to say about it, that it's a widely known fact.
Now, getting back to the political divide, I've read that attending regular religious services is the most reliable indicator of somebody's voting preferences other than race.
That's true, and it was definitely true in the 2000 election. If you look at the exit polls, that survey included a question of frequency of attendance at religious services, and you're really talking about 2/3 of people who go to church weekly or more voting Republican. That's still true in our polling for Protestants. But as I suggested a moment ago, it's less true of Catholics right now. Now, whether that's going to be the trend we see all the way into the fall, it's hard to say. But there appears to be some lessening of that difference between regular churchgoers and those who go less often politically.
And so this is not quite as polarized as a lot of the rest of the electorate?
Our polling suggests that that's the case right now.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. Scott Keeter is Associate Director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. He was with us here in Studio 3A. Appreciate it.
Nice to be here.
Joining us now is Amy Sullivan. She's a frequent contributor to Washington Monthly, a doctoral candidate in the sociology of religion at Princeton University. She also thinks the Democratic Party could do a much better job reaching out to religious Americans. She's also with us here in Studio 3A. Welcome to the program.
It's my pleasure.
How well does John Kerry, do you think, seem to understand the role of religion when he's out campaigning?
I think John Kerry approaches this question as a Catholic, and it's important to note that our past two successful Democratic presidential candidates have been Southern Baptists, who have a very different way of both thinking about the role of religion in public life, but also talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a much more...
Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton,
yes, had just more of a familiarity and a comfort with the language of religion, but also it's something that was just talked about where they grew up. I think Catholics and Midwest Protestants as well have more of a reticence. It's not something you talk about in terms of conversion experiences or testimonials. So that is sort of something that John Kerry brings into this in terms of just not having that immediate comfort level talking about religion. I think what he does understand is that religion really informs people's lives, in particular their political lives. He talks very much, and you ran this clip about him saying,
mm-hmm.
I think of myself as a U.S. senator and as a Catholic, but the two are not really mixed. What he knows, however, is that the two can't be completely divorced, that there is some tension, and he himself has dealt with this personally on the issue of abortion. There's some tension between Catholic social teaching and between his role as a politician.
He also seems to respond in much the same way that the previous Democrat Catholic presidential candidate responded, that, of course, being John Kennedy. Basically, Some people have said that the response of "I keep my religion out of my politics" was a defensive reaction by John Kennedy trying to reassure Protestants that the White House would not be taking orders from the Vatican. And John Kerry's similar response, again, is meant to reassure Protestants but not to reach out to them.
Well, it worked in 1960, but political reality is very different now than it was then. One of the challenges that faces him right now is that the separation of church and state line that Kennedy used was designed to make Protestants feel more comfortable. It was designed to tell them, look, I'm a religious person, but being Catholic won't have anything to do with how I behave as president. Whereas Kerry now is almost required in order to reach out to Catholics to say, being Catholic will have everything to do with how I behave as president. Now, he's still holding a hard line, but separation of church and state has never been sort of the revered principle in the Catholic Church that it is in the Protestant Church. So it's unclear that that strategy is really going to work with his intended audience.
We're talking about the role of religion in presidential politics. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's talk with Kevin, who's with us from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi there. Good afternoon. Great conversation, and I hope it stimulates some thought nationwide. It is amazing to me that so many people in the United States are alarmed or frightened by theocratic governments in the rest of the world, but they rush headlong to firmly plant their own religion squarely in their government, flying in the face of everything our country has been about.
And are you speaking about this particular Republican administration now?
Oh, yeah, where the shoe fits, absolutely. And every other right-wing Christian group that feels like it has to have a stranglehold on a governmental office or a candidate and so forth, it's surprising that people don't know when and where spirituality and religion and ethics can end and government can religion can pick up.
Amy Sullivan, Kevin is hardly alone. That's a pretty important constituency, too.
Oh, absolutely. And he brings up an important point, which is that Americans have a tradition of really valuing the separation of church and state. And it should be pointed out that's not just to protect the state from the influence of religion, but just as important, there's a very strong tradition of wanting to protect churches from the influence of the state. In fact, you know, within the Baptist Church, you'll find a heck of a lot of people who are quite conservative, who want that separation maintained in order to protect their churches. At the same time, as you said at the top of the show, that doesn't necessarily mean that faith and politics need to be kept entirely separate. And I think that's something that Democrats, frankly, have not done a good enough job explaining. Whenever separation of church and state comes up, it's in such a sort of vague context that it makes it sound as if you can't talk about religion in a campaign without really crossing this line that we've seen crossed far too many times.
Kevin, are you suspicious when you hear candidates use religious rhetoric?
Oh, am I glad you asked that, because one of the notes I made just jarring my memory is that not only am I suspicious, but the first thing I think of when someone must inject wholeheartedly their religion and not just spirituality into either their candidacy or their government role or whatever is that I think they are a demagogue of the worst resort and just worthy of a gutter.
Thanks very much for the phone call, Kevin.
Thank you.
We're going to be obviously talking about more about this when we come back from a break. Our guest is Amy Sullivan, who's a contributor to Washington Monthly and writes a lot about Democratic politics and religion. If you'd like to join the conversation again, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about how religious Americans want their political leaders to act and about politics on the and religion on the presidential campaign trail. Of course, you're invited to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with Amy Sullivan, who's a doctoral candidate at Princeton University's School of Princeton University in Sociology of Religion. I'll get that straight. And she's with us here in Studio 3A. Interesting comparison to the phone call we had just before the break. Here's an email from Frank Miller. I'm a rare bird, I guess, because we're seldom mentioned, a born-again Christian liberal. I have a hard time taking Kerry's statement, though he might honestly believe it. If someone is truly a person of faith, then all decisions, private, public, commercial, and all, will be at least colored by your religious beliefs.
I think that's a good point, and it's one of the reasons why the Kerry campaign might want to allow their candidate to talk more about either his faith or just religion in general. You know, there are a lot of values that come from Catholic social teaching that are so closely related to policies in the Democratic Party. You can talk about social justice. You can talk about the common good. And those aren't necessarily phrases that come off as overly religious, or they don't have to do with personal piety. But they can express a fact that your values, whether they come from a religious tradition or some other place, cannot be divorced from political decision-making and how you come up with positions about things that go on in the world.
A campaign is more than a candidate. It's a political party, as you mentioned in one of your articles. The Democratic Party, well, the perception is that they're in controlled by a secularist wing that is uncomfortable with religion and the language of religion. You talked a little bit about that earlier, but also that they see religions almost as a constituency, you know, something you're looking to get, like the union vote. Mm-hmm. And you say that's not appropriate.
Well, people in the party want to know, in terms of religious communities, how many Catholics can we get in the Midwest if we do X, if we hold an event here, if we put these words in a speech. And it just doesn't work that way. Religious people look to a candidate to sort of get an idea of where his moral grounding is. And it's so much more than just holding an event someplace or having endorsements from particular religious leaders. And I think what we see is both a split between the people who run national democratic politics, who do on average tend to be more secular than your average American, and democratic voters, who, as we know, and as Scott told us, are majority religious people themselves, and also a split in terms of the direction of the Democratic Party. We've seen over the past year or so a real push to really recognize values and morality and sort of to take these concepts back from the Republican Party. They've been seated for at least 20 years or more, mm-hmm. and Democrats are starting to say, you know, no, we care about those things too. Compassion, that was ours first, and we're going to take it back.
Let's get another caller on the line. Dave is with us from North Tonawanda in New York.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just thinking, you know, we keep talking about people turning their religion off when they get into their politics, you know, the separation. And I just don't see, you know, I am a Christian, and the way Christianity works, it's part of your life. It's your whole life. And I don't see how, you know, a candidate could turn that off if they're, you know, they really believe in their Christianity. That has to spill over into their political life.
So in a way, you see it as a character issue?
Yeah, I think it goes. It shows that it's Sunday is not just a time you go to church because that's what you do on Sunday. It's what they're learning spills over and builds their character.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that Amy Sullivan, the Democratic Party, and the Kerry campaign are going to have to learn, or is this something, as you look at the mechanics of this campaign, thus far, candidate Kerry has really stayed away from these kind of issues?
You know, I think he did a good job a few months ago when he was on the campaign trail, appeared at a few Baptist churches, and put this in terms of talking the talk and walking the walk. What he did was quote from James and say, "What good is it if a man claims to have no faith or claims to have faith but has no deeds?" And that really put this in a context to say, "Look at what I do." You know, in the Baptist church where I grew up, we would call it witnessing by example. You know, look at my deeds, look at what I do, and that's how you'll know who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned before that American voters want to have it all ways. They want their candidate to be a man of faith, but 50% of them also say they don't want him to talk about it, which puts candidates in a very difficult position. How do you show people that you are a religious person or that you are a moral person without actually talking about it? And I think one of those ways is to point to your policies and your accomplishments and what it is that you stand for, and have that be sort of a proxy for not having to be out there with the God talk or the Jesus talk, but say, you know, you shall know me by what I do.
Dave, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And Amy, one final question to you, and that's you said Democrats are very largely uncomfortable with religion, one big exception, Black Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. But I don't think... Well, for Black politicians, again, it's sort of along the Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton lines of it's something that's in their community, they're comfortable talking about it, they're familiar with it. For national Democrats, they're comfortable going into Black churches because they feel it's a way to get out an ethnic vote. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily a way of acknowledging religion. It's just this is where we can find the community. This is where we can speak to as many voters as possible at one time. So that is where the entirety of Democratic outreach in religious communities has been prior to this election. This is really a change.
Amy Sullivan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Amy Sullivan, as we mentioned, frequent contributor to the Washington Monthly magazine and a doctoral candidate at Princeton University in the sociology of religion. I got it right that time. She was with us here in Studio 3A. And on the other side of the table is Michael Cromarty, vice president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center and director of the Center's Evangelical Studies Project. We're asking him about the other party involved in this year's presidential election, the Republican Party. Welcome to Studio 3A.
Thank you, Neil.
You've been listening to our conversation thus far. Does Amy Sullivan lay out a feasible plan for John Kerry and a way for him to go, do you think?
Well, I think she does. However, I think that John Kerry and his party have to be careful, because if it's not authentic, if it's not something he's comfortable with, if it seems stilted and forced, then he runs a risk of making the mistake that Howard Dean did, which was when the New Republic ran a cover story on Howard Dean's lack of religion. He immediately started talking religiously and said his favorite book of the New Testament was the book of Job, which happened to be in the Old Testament. And so you got to be careful. If it's not natural and authentic, then you can make some real errors.
On the other side of the coin, you were quoted in a recent article, I think in Time magazine, as saying when President Bush uses religious rhetoric, which he does quite a bit, that as many people as that reassures and brings into his camp, it repulses another one.
Yes, I was actually misquoted slightly on that one. As many people, for every two people that like the way he says it, one person is offended by it.
I see. So
that part didn't get in the quote.
That part didn't
get
in the quote.
But it is true that his rhetoric either emboldens people to like him or many people to dislike him, which points out the divide we've been discussing on the program.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think it is that at the same time we have this long tradition, this fervent tradition of separation of church and state, that at the same time we want our presidents to be religious, to have faith, if not if Ronald Reagan didn't attend church all that often, but everybody knew he was a man of faith.
Well, you're right. In fact, the Pew Research Center, whose guest you had on earlier, mm-hmm. Pointed out in a poll last summer that 70% of Americans want their president to be a person of personal faith. And so I think that the fact of the matter is somehow people want to know that their presidents have a normative ethic, an authority that transcends their own personal beliefs that they can refer to, and it makes them comfortable.
Let's get another listener involved in the conversation. Jason is with us from Salt Lake City.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, I grew up in a very religious town. I grew up here in Salt Lake City. And I have to say, when I was young, it didn't actually occur to me how religion and politics mingled very freely. And now, whenever I hear someone, at least most often when I hear a politician use his religious belief, my hackles go straight up, because I feel like all they're trying to do is manipulate someone to do something. And they're not talking about anything that is specific or common for all people, because God and belief is something that is different for everyone. No matter if you belong to a specific faith or not, you're still interpreting God according to your own experience and what you have experienced of the world. And to have a politician come in and say, this is how it should be, or this is what I believe, I want to know why they're saying that, because it just seems like a manipulation to me.
Who do you vote for, Jason?
Who do I vote for here?
Well, I was talking about national politics.
I'm a Democrat.
Well, as we heard, obviously Bill Clinton talked in this kind of language all the time.
Yes.
And so did Jimmy Carter.
And so
he was also somebody who you could get to speak in great lengths and with specific with specifics about particular things that he does. The thing that gets my hackles up about George Bush and the administration right now is that you can get them to speak freely about their particular. You can get George Bush to speak very freely about his religious beliefs,
mm-hmm.
but to get him to speak about a particular policy or a particular thing that they're doing with any clarity without being brushed off is a difficult thing to do. So it seems like smoke and shadows to me.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Jason.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. A lot of voters, as Jason suggests, are driven away from a candidacy by the kind of religious language. Yet, again, the polling suggests two for every one.
Well, that's right. And I think, I mean, it is true the presidential candidates have to be very careful here. And so that's why you'll find with President Bush, and you found it with President Clinton and President Carter and President Reagan, using non-sectarian language. Words like providence, creator.
As opposed to Lord.
As opposed to Lord or Savior. And so they work very hard, I know their speechwriters do, to try to appeal to all people, to believers and non-believers. And even when they try their hardest, they're sometimes criticized for it.
Let's talk now with Rhonda in Casper, Wyoming.
Yes, hi, I was calling. I was curious as to what our polls were demographically. The younger generation has recently been more accepting of things like gay marriage and things that, you know, really fall along the wayside of any religious, you know, doctrine or anything. And I'm just curious, I realize, and what you had said earlier about people, you know, younger generation not voting as much, I was just curious if we had any demographics on your polling.
Our pollster, Scott Keeter, has left, but I think Michael Cromarty reads these polls pretty carefully.
Right.
Well, I do, but I haven't seen any on younger people, and it's how they're... There is a kind of a religious revival going on among young people, but we haven't seen the polling as to how it's going to affect either their civic engagement or their voting behavior.
And is that, well, obviously Pew polls people for different reasons than the parties poll people, but young people tend not to vote in the numbers that other people do. Might that be a reason for that lack of data?
Well, that's one of the reasons for the lack of data, but it'd also be interesting to do a poll to find out if they become religious, do they vote more? Do they become more civically engaged in public life?
What's your experience, Rhonda?
Well, actually, I'm pretty much against the organization of religion. You know, I truly believe that we are all spiritual. We're all spirits in the world. And that I think that our politics should really reflect what's best for everyone. And truly, when you give yourself a label, you know, it just kind of makes it more, you know, less for everyone and more for just specific groups. So, you know, I think that it would be best if everyone really stuck with the greater whole as opposed to just smaller groups of opinions.
Okay, Rhonda, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We're discussing the role of religion on the presidential campaign trail. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Chuck, and Chuck joins us from Norfolk, Virginia.
Yes, I'm one of those black Democrats that was alluded to earlier, and what I've found is I've been going through somewhat of a transformation that is rooted in my beliefs and my Christian beliefs, being a follower of Christ, and that is that many of the issues of life, of the sanctity of life, I should say, that you hear coming out of the Republican camp or the Christian right resonate with me, but what is problematic for me and the reason why I haven't been able to embrace the Republican Party on a national level is because their policies are not in line with their rhetoric, and I've struggled with that. So I guess what I'm looking for is a new kind of Democrat or a new kind of Republican that I can embrace wherein they would espouse the same kind of rhetoric that resonates with me, that being issues of the sanctity of life, i.e. abortion and just, you know, issues that are consistent with a Christian walk, but at the same time that their policies in the area of social justice will mirror that of what I think a Christian should be.
Abortion and the death penalty.
the death penalty, and any number of other that things that are consistent with the Word of God.
Michael Cromarty, Chuck brings up an interesting point.
Well, he does, and there's a big debate among liberals and conservatives about what really social justice is and how best to have the government put it into play. The biggest critics in the Republican Party of President Bush are to his right for saying he spends too much money on social programs, and that if you read the editorials in the Washington Post, you constantly see people saying that Bush is actually got a very unhappy part of his own party that's saying he's spending far too much money. So I think that Chuck is raising an important point that that must be taken very seriously. The debate is really about what is social justice and how might the government make it happen. Some people who are followers of who like President Bush think that some of the programs that we've paid billions of dollars for have actually made matters worse than better, and that therefore it's an injustice to make matters worse.
Chuck, thank you.
Well, what I can say is what Mr. Bush has been espousing, I certainly would not characterize as being social justice.
Okay. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Okay.
Let's see if we get one more caller in, and this is Brooke, who's on the line from Naples, Florida.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
My wife is a Methodist minister, and I am a Jewish middle-aged Democrat, and I was just concerned about some of the conversation being held here and no comment regarding the language used by the politicians to entice the Jewish faith. Is it primarily as a result of the numbers are not significant enough to warrant it? And what do any of them pay attention to that? And you know, what have you heard or seen on how they deal with the Jewish faith and the potential voters out there?
Michael Cromarty, I don't think there's any group too small to pay attention to in Florida.
Well, that's right, and that's why Senator Lieberman was on the ticket with Al Gore in 2000, and that's why it almost work to help for Vice President Gore to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, what candidates are trying to do is to appeal to as many people religiously diverse as they are. And when you start focusing on one group, mm-hmm. The tendency then is to alienate others, as Brooke was pointing out.
But he raises the question about being, as you say, authenticity in talking about Christians, but also you have to worry about the same thing when you're talking to groups like Jews and Muslims.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why I say authenticity is important, because you have to make it has to be true for the person making the statements, and in making them, it has
back,
to seem
back to character again.
Back to character, they have to seem to be authentic and comfortable. It cannot be contrived, or people across the religious perspectives will see it as being inauthentic.
Brooke, thank you for the phone call. And Michael Cromarty, we thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Michael Cromarty is Vice President of the Ethics and Public Policy Center and Director of the Center's Evangelical Studies Project. He joined us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a break, we're going to be talking about politics in a neighboring country. That's Canada. They'll be sending a minority government to Ottawa. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, if you'd like to get into that conversation. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News.